Balance of Nature, changing the world one life at a time.
I'm loving it so much, and I'm so happy that I'm just a member of that, because I just pop the pills and forget about everything else. I really am enjoying them, and I'm so glad that I've never met Dr. Howard, and it's fine. But I just tell him that I'm just loving it, and I couldn't agree more with him. It is working spectacularly for me. Couldn't be better, and I couldn't be more pleased.
Experience the Balance of Nature difference for yourself. Receive 25% off your first preferred purchase of Balance of Nature. Plus, get a set of convenient travel bottles containing a free additional week's supply of Balance of Nature's fruits and veggies. With these discounts, you will still receive free shipping on every order. Call 800-246-8751 or go to balanceofnature.com and use discount code KATE.
Call 888-673-1450. This is the Kate Daly Show.
My purple mountain, America, America. Well, God set His grace on thee.
Welcome back, Kate Daly Show. It's Ray Charles. Definitely up in years, singing "America the Beautiful." That was almost our anthem. There was a big fight over that because the anthem that we have represented war a little too much, and they wanted this one that represented the lands, the, you know, what America looked like and the beauty and representing all the different areas of America. So, and now we know which one won that debate, but this almost was our anthem. Welcome back to the show. I've got Uncle Melty with me, and we were just talking about the Constitution, because I was just saying how they didn't want, the founders didn't want the federal government. This is Constitution Day, by the way, if you're just joining us. The founders didn't want the feds to control everything with uniform policies, and so their vital safety valve was you could move if you didn't like that particular state into another state. Without that, there was no practical way to vent anger, right, for somebody. And they might not agree with how a state was run, so they could move away. And so modern federal efforts to impose uniform solutions to everything on the entire nation, look how many people call for that. They want a uniform, every citizen subject across the land, making the federal government a dictatorship. They want that. And so that's what's, of course, behind today's more political, toxic, swampy swamp. But the perception that the Constitution endangered local self-government was a central reason why Americans, perhaps a majority, initially opposed it. And the Constitution's advocates knew that unless they reassured the dissenters, the public was never going to adopt it. So they promised that once the government was functioning, they would offer constitutional amendments to further limit central power. That was the deal of the day. They had just gotten away, fought a revolution, and now they wanted to limit central power. Mm-hmm. They honored the promise. The amendments were known as the Bill of Rights. The advocates of the Constitution also adopted another course of action that was kind of less known today, that's less known right now. And that is, they gave speeches and they wrote articles explaining to the people how the Constitution limited federal power. And sensing the need to be very specific, they listed government functions that would be outside the federal sphere. These would be the exclusive province of state governments and the private sector. So the Constitution's advocates assured the public and reassured the public that if the central government passed laws exceeding its authority, then the courts would declare them unconstitutional. Gee, I don't see the courts doing that.
That's because we don't know. You know,
we
Chris
don't.
Ann often quotes things, say, out of the Tench Cox papers.
Yes.
One of the writers of these essays that we're talking about.
Pennsylvania. Mm-hmm.
And the Federalist Papers and the mm-hmm. Anti-Federalist
the
Papers.
The papers are central to understanding all this.
Because you really need mm-hmm. to put everything in context.
Right.
And those papers and essays are what do that.
Yeah. If I wrote a paper saying that I want dogs to be behind bars, Now, don't you want to know in context why I feel that way? Or
yeah.
what led to that? Or what was the reasoning behind that? And so sometimes we read what we read on the Constitution, we don't understand why it is that way, or why they came to that. And so you've got to understand the why, right? And so the Constitution's advocates really wanted us to fight anybody, or especially the feds, exceeding the authority. And most of the advocates issuing these lists were lawyers, and they knew the courts would give great respect to representations about a law from the law's sponsors, of course. So some of the advocates who used the lists of non-federal powers, they remain famous. What do we have a musical? Hamilton, right? people don't realize what Hamilton really, you know, stood for in the day. James Madison, John Marshall, before he became Chief Justice. And then others are lesser known, like you said, Tench Cox of Pennsylvania, Alexander Conti Hansen of Maryland, and James Iredell of North Carolina. And so Cox may have been the most widely read, probably among the whole general public, and he was a Philadelphia businessman. He served in the Confederation Congress in 1789, later served as our very first Assistant Secretary of the Treasury. And most of Cox's essays really have been available. They're available for free online, but until recently, four were hidden from all but constitutional scholars, and of those four finally were republished actually earlier this year, Tench Cox. So his essays itemize many of the activities over which the Constitution granted the federal government little or no jurisdiction. And among them were social services, care for the poor and health care, education, religion, real estate, local business, most roads and other infrastructure, and nearly all criminal law matters and most civil court cases. Let me reiterate that. The Constitution granted the federal government little or no jurisdiction over social services, the poor, health care, education, religion, real estate, local businesses, most of the roads, infrastructure, nearly all criminal law matters, and most civil court cases.
What could go wrong with the government having control over education?
Wow. Oh, man. I hearken to yesterday's conversation.
Yep.
So until the 1930s, the courts voided any measure exceeding the federal government's enumerated powers. And during the New Deal, this is what began to change. So much happened in those couple of decades. So although, and not for good either, although many believe that that change occurred because President Franklin Roosevelt threatened the Supreme Court, modern research suggests that there were other reasons. And in any event, the Constitution's plan for federalism stopped operating when Cox and other founders designed it. But reading Cox's essays really kind of enables us as a public now to recapture how federalism was supposed to work. They weren't supposed to have any jurisdiction over all the things that the candidates are promising on the stage.
That's right.
On both sides of the aisle, no jurisdiction. When our government says, well, we just need to do something about health care. No, we don't. We don't need to do something about health care.
Not healthcare. Their
job. No, the people do, not, and the businesses, not the government. Yeah.
But you have to admit, you What's do that? Want them telling you whether or not you can eat beef or not, don't you?
Yes. Gosh.
Goodness gracious. Not only have they decided they have authority over these things, but they've decided they have the ultimate authority over these things.
Right, right. I was looking at an email, and it happened to be for Romney, because Romney's in the state that I'm in. And it was an email of all the things he was about to go do, right, and meet with. And it was everything from vaping experts to health care to education to certain religious groups to, I mean, the list was long. And I remember thinking, I wish we had a check mark, and I would check each one of them and send the email back, because it would say he's not allowed to do any of these things. None of these things are really under his purview. And we forget sometimes that as they're busybodies trying to get into everything and do everything, and they always start out the conversation this way. Because I was just listening to the Dana Show the other day, and the person started out that she was interviewing saying, well, we know that we need to do something. And we know that the people look to us to do something. That's the whole problem right there. In a nutshell, you don't have to do anything, and the people shouldn't be looking at you to do something. And a lot of people use that as the caveat and the big excuse. They want us to. Well, that's where public education needs to get better in understanding that we're not supposed to be asking these things. And then government should never step in, even if the people wanted them to. If they were a fantastic government body, they'd be saying, sorry, people, we can't do what you want us to do. We're not going to get involved.
Well, I wouldn't hold your breath for education to get better until we get rid of the U.S. Department of Education.
Yeah, absolutely. Reagan tried to get rid of it, and that, you know, he got a pretty big warning shot on that one, didn't he? So this brings me to talking about, red flag, because I thought this was kind of interesting and I wanted to pass this along and share this with you. And this comes by way of 10th Amendment Center. So the under pressure to do something, like I was just talking about mass killings, right? All these politicians want to do something. And Republicans and Democrats are endorsing red flag laws. These are so dangerous to our freedom. And this law is what authorizes confiscation of firearms if a judge finds the owner poses a risk to himself or others, and it's all based on hearsay. So the history of red flag laws should actually make politicians reconsider this. And modern red flag laws deny gun owners prior notice. They can't defend themselves against an initial confiscation order. The judge doesn't even meet with them. Nothing, just signs it. So the judge issues an order after an uncontested hearing. And so in some states, the person seeking the order is held to a relatively low burden of proof, just hearsay from a neighbor, friend, yep, family member, right? So the disregard for due process would be wrong, even if red flag laws were proven effective. But the few studies on the subject are actually suggesting that they aren't. The one study even concludes that the measures may increase, okay?
Yep.
In politics, we know if a proposal doesn't serve its advertised purpose, then the advertised purpose usually is not the real one. So in this case, the dominant motive seems to be to take away guns from people to keep us safe. Okay? But if you would listen to this, the real motive is not safety at all. And this is because the phrase red flag law in our history has been proverbial for the enactment masquerading as a safety measure, but really passed for really sinister reasons. So listen up. A lot of people think automobiles were invented around the turn of the last century, but a steam-driven car successfully navigated the streets of London as early as 1803, 100 years earlier, okay? Yep. A car powered by the internal combustion engine was designed in 1808, and by mid-century, steam autos appeared regularly on English roads. The new invention, it was called road locomotive, it posed this financial threat to all the entrenched special interests that were around. Railroads, horse-drawn carriage, all of these things, you know, buggy makers, farms who raised horses for sale, recognized that automobiles could, you know, reduce public demand for their products. Kind of funny, I'm thinking about electric cars, oil, anyway. And so instead of adapting to the market, the special interests lobbied politicians, lobbied the government for laws protecting them from competition, and the advertised reason was automobile safety. Had nothing to do with safety, everything to do with money.
Right.
Right?
I think that still happens today.
I think so, too. So beginning in 1861, the British Parliament, some American state legislators and cities imposed draconian restrictions on road locomotives. And they enacted absurdly low speed limits, such as 2 miles per hour in town and 4 miles per hour on the highway as you're doing 80. Just remember that. Another rule was that any person with a horse could force a car to stop for any reason or for no reason simply by raising their hand. A Pennsylvania bill that was vetoed by the governor would have required the owner of any automobile who encountered a horse or other livestock to dismantle his vehicle and conceal the parts in the bushes that were nearby. So the most famous enactment of the British Locomotive Act of 1865, among all these other regulations, it mandated that every car have a crew of at least three persons this mandatory, you have to have this many people in the car to precede such locomotive on foot not less than 60 yards and shall carry a red flag constantly displayed, you know, like the gold star.
Yep. Yep.
A red flag. They wanted to have to show a red flag, and they had to warn the riders and drivers of horses of the approach of such locomotives, and then they had to signal the driver thereof when it shall be necessary to stop and shall assist horses and carriages drawn by horses. So the requirement that a crew member precede the car with a red flag gave the restrictive enactments their popular name. name, the Red Flag Law.
Yep.
So unfortunately, the Red Flag Law stalled automobile progress for years because it conflicted with the industries at the time, right? They wanted their cake. And they were loosened in the 19th century, and then progress resumed. And this is why many think of cars as not being invented until the 19th or 20th centuries. It was actually stalled by red flag laws, posing as safety, having nothing to do with safety, having everything to do with infringing on the rights of people to want to drive said road locomotives.
What an interesting concept.
Right? And so isn't that interesting? In fact, in 1904, John Scott Montague, a British MP, wrote a survey of automobile laws for the American Scholarly Journal, and he said this: the continual misdirected effort of the law to control vehicles, about which the lawmakers have had as a rule but shadowy and erroneous ideas, future generations will laugh at the illogical efforts their forefathers made to restrict the use of the automobile. And so he might as well have been describing red flag laws, the infringement of red flag laws on so many different rights, all in the name of safety.
Yeah.
Think twice when you hear a politician say, "I just want to do something. I just want to do something." Scariest words a politician could ever say. I just want
to.
I know I have to do something about this. No, you don't have to do anything about this. We'll be right back on the Kate Daly Show. We'll take your calls, too. I'll be back with Uncle Milty in just a moment. Stay with us.
Have you been...